This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. How's the weather up your way? Because it's jolly chilly here in Dunedin.
Beautiful and fine in the Waikato. The sun's shining and I was sitting in the conservatory before. It was getting too hot for me. I had to move out.
Watch you, sir.
I have to admit, though, when you get outside, it's not quite as good as it looks. Quite interesting. I was just looking at the tournaments coming up, and there are a few of these restricted 3A tournaments, which are very popular and booked out well ahead of time. If you're an open player, there's not that much to play in. It's definitely cut back on the number of tournaments if you're not eligible for the restricted ones.
So I guess the only teaser for open and below is the Akarana Swiss, which they're happy to run on a Tuesday night. Now, was I right in hearing Malcolm say that you can play any number of nights that you wanted? How does that work in a Swiss event? Because normally you start with one number and you end up with the same number. How are they making that work, Barry?
I'm really not sure how they're doing it, but that's definitely what he said. So whether you're allowed an unlimited number of subs or something, I don't think they've asked us to find subs or anything. So I don't know how that's going to work. You know, if you're somebody that hasn't been playing, they just stick you in at the bottom of the field. I'm only guessing, Mariana. I don't really know how they're going to do it.
Quite innovative.
It is. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. So you're down in Dunedin in the cold down there. Are you going to play any bridge while you're there? It sounds like you're a bit too busy for that.
No bridge while I'm down here this time. But anyway, but I am gearing up to play earlier. I'm going to play in the South Island Piers. Going to be checking out bridge clubs in Christchurch because I'll be here for a week. And I also touched base with John Skipper. We were talking about the youth program that I'm running and tagged into the youth camp coming up first weekend in September. They've got some people down there that may be interested in helping grow the game of youth with the Bridge and Schools program. So that's pretty cool.
You're not doing anything bridge-wise this week down in Dunedin. You're down there visiting family, shall we say?
I'll be having a meeting with some people from Christchurch. The last week in August and the first week in September is when I'm going to be in Christchurch. So I'm going to be having a look and getting some youth forecasting meetings going down there, which is going to be cool, with Tim Schumacher and Jan Alabaster and whoever else may be interested in deep diving into this Bridge and Schools initiative. So that's pretty cool. Something to look forward to.
So what sort of numbers are we looking at so far for the youth program in September?
We've got 46 so far.
46 now? I think it was 38 last time I was talking to you about it. So we're heading for 50.
Poor, it's a big number, isn't it? We need a little bit more money in the pool. We're just looking at various funding avenues that we can go down because you've got to feed them, run the programs.
I mean, the good news is that they're probably mostly teenagers, and as we all know, teenagers don't eat much, do they?
I don't know which teenage family you're involved with, but they start eating double their weight.
If you go look in the fridge, it's going to be empty. I'm telling you now.
It's interesting. It's a cool event. We've actually booked all the air flight. Christchurch's going to get an influx of over 50 people because, of course, some of the youth players are coming with chaperones, which is awesome because with that amount of people, we do need all hands at the pump. At the moment, I'm looking for some additional funding.
Okay, so if you've got any ideas on additional funding for the youth players, just email us at bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com.
I have a couple of ideas which I'm going to produce tomorrow.
I can just imagine. I reckon you'll be robbing a bank. That's what it'll be. I could just see you with a balaclava over your head and a shotgun in one hand and a bag in the other.
Funny, talking about balaclavas, that's the suburb that we're actually staying in.
That's
quite a cool name for a suburb. Where do you live, Balaclava, Dunedin?
Ifayakine. Coming up next, it's time for the Gin Club. That's juniors, intermediates and novices, and our man on the spot, Mr. Gin himself, it's Ross Longney.
Hey, Mr. Gin. I can see the shape you're in. Finger on your eyebrow.
Good morning, Rust. Happy chilly morning to you.
Ooh, it is a cold morning around the country today. Not bad here in the balmy north, the winterless north.
Can't believe you said it was 8 degrees there and we're down here in the frost. There wasn't too much in the way of tournaments this weekend, open-wise. A few intermediates, juniors and novices performing.
Quite a number of them, actually, albeit that there wasn't much open stuff on. On Friday night, Auckland Northern had their interclub, and the top intermediate players there were Jennifer Colgan and Sue Bellin, and the top junior players were Sophie Krantz and Glenda McLeod, and all four of those were from the Mangawai Club. That was a good little result from their club. The Trouty Lytle Cup that I've been talking about a few times to try and get the numbers up, that was won by Alec Lewin and Alistair Bury from Remuera. I Googled this morning to try and find out who Trouty Lytle was. No information on Google, but the Trouty Lytle Cup has been around for a long, long time. And I noticed in 1987, it was won by Kevin Hu, who directed the tournament at Howick. And that evening, caught his plane at 11 o'clock and headed off to China. So Kevin was a winning junior. Now, Hara had a junior and a novice pairs. The junior novice pairs was won by Stephen and Paul Cowrey from Fielding. They averaged 62.5, and there were 13 tables at that tournament. A good turnout. They had an intermediate running alongside it, so a total of 30 tables on the day. The intermediate was won by Claire Martin and Diane Werder, both from Hawera. The Sotheby's Nelson Junior was won by Jenny Norton and Pat Reed, both from Nelson, and they averaged over 62%. Sometimes I mention the percents if they're really meritorious. Now, in the upper part of the island, I'll go firstly, the Matamata 5A, which was won by Liz Fisher and Kathy Yule, but I meant to mention that in second came Kerry McRae and Bill Leach. Now, both of those are still intermediate players, so that was a really good result. And the top intermediate pair, I think, from my calculation, were Andrew Reynolds and Mark Lynch from Omokoroa. If you recall, a couple of weeks ago, they won the Tauranga Restricted together. So they're having a good little trot.
They were in the running for most of the day too, Ross. I was watching that tournament.
Very good intermediate players. In Howick, the 8B Restricted, the top intermediate pair there were Deirdre Oliver and her partner, Mr. Jin. Second place overall were both Jinnies as well. And so they didn't qualify as the top II. They didn't get the bottle of wine for that. That was Mark and Karina Sim-Smith. They were second overall. And top on the day were Anne and Leo Sim.
Oh, right, yeah.
Karina's mum and dad. They had a quaddie then. We're all from Howick winning the top prizes. Okay. The Tyree graded pairs, because coming first down there was Graham Dale and Vivian Clifford Marsh. Graham Dale's from Balclutha and Vivian's from Invercargill. Graham Dale is a Ginny. He's an intermediate player, and he won that tournament with Vivian down there, which was a great result. I did actually look to see what happened in the Pete Benham Open down in Wellington. That was run by Brian Cleaver and John Luoni, and they got a 69.8% in the first session. Not Ginny's, definitely worth a mention.
Well, Brian Cleaver, of course, used to play with Pete Benham, didn't he?
Yes, and interestingly, Brian Cleaver and Pete Benham played in the 70s when I first played bridge back in the day in the 70s with Rex Benson and Dougal McLean, of course. And that's about all I've got, my friends.
I'm going to put you on the spot here, Ross, going back to Mangawai. How big would the Mangawai Club be? Any idea roughly how many members they'd have?
I would think they would have 90 to 100 members.
Okay, it's a reasonable size.
They run a very nice restricted tournament, which was won by an intermediate and junior pair from East Coast Bays and North Shore.
Okay, Ross, thank you very much.
Catch up with us next week. The Gin Man leads you out with the Gin Club motto.
Observa omne, neminem time. Respect all, fear none. Have a good week. Light it and
send it out. Send it out now. Coming up next is part two of our chat with Malcolm Mayer, New Zealand representative, current president of Akarana, and yep, he talks about his experiences and how long he's been representing our country.
I really believe in our game. I think that, you know, our game is something that we need to sell throughout the known land. And we need to encourage our existing players to do better and better and better. There are two aspects to our game. Obviously, there's the social side. There's also the competitive side. If one ignores the competitive side, then perhaps one might start losing friends if you don't keep up. So as far as the app is concerned, I had a great deal to do with the designing of it, I guess, or spearheading it, if you like. The chief software designer who put the whole thing together is New Zealand's head director, Mr. Matthew McManus. He's an excellent man, an excellent man to deal with. In fact, he drove our tournament on Friday and he seemed pretty well invisible, which meant the thing went incredibly smoothly, as it always does under his governance.
Where does Matthew actually live at the moment?
Oh, he lives in the mainland. He's in Dunedin.
Oh, right.
That's the beauty about Real Bridge. You could be living anywhere and playing anywhere.
Anywhere from Dunedin to Egypt, apparently.
Yeah, living anywhere and playing everywhere.
A little bit about Malcolm Mayo while we've got you there, because some of our listeners are fairly new to the game. They might not have heard of you, Malcolm. So how many times do you reckon you've played for New Zealand? Just a rough estimate.
If one does not count the regional events, which the Pacific Islands and Australia, if one doesn't include that, then it would be in the order of 32. Oh. It makes quite a few more when you talk about the regional.
This is a delicate question. What year was the first year you played?
Well, it's a bit embarrassing, to be fair.
Come on, Malcolm. What year was it? Wasn't this century. I know that.
Okay, well, I'll tell you why it's embarrassing. Well, it's not embarrassing. My first year was 1976. And in some ways, it was very exciting for a young boy. I mean, I was 19 at the time when selected. It happened to be the very first year. It was what we called in those days the Far East Championship. Now that China has actually joined the group, it's changed its name from the Far East to the Asia Pacific Bridge Championships. Anyway, in those days, as I say, it was the Far East. And it happened to be the very first time that that event was hosted right here in New Zealand. So my first time of representing New Zealand meant actually I played in New Zealand, which wasn't quite so flash, you know, and it was here in Auckland. I stayed at home and drove to the venue each day. It wasn't as exciting as most people's first exposure. I was determined to dig in as a New Zealand representative, and at that stage, New Zealand's youngest. So I made a vow that I had to play for at least the first 10 years nonstop, and so I did that and a bit more. And of course, all of those things, they add to naught when you look back. Yes, it seems I've been playing many, many years, and there's basically two decades that I didn't play at all, or hardly at all. Having two different families meant basically two different decades. So we're only as good as our last performance. In many ways, that's true. I mean, there's one thing that says, one principle, that form is temporary and class is eternal. I would like to think that it applies to me. You know, on the other hand, I may well be past it. But anyway, that doesn't mean that I can't help others. And that's what our app is all about. And that's what Akarana is all about. A number of us now, Akarana was set up as a club for youngsters. And I joined Akarana when I was still at secondary school. And which is, you know, becoming more and more common, that kind of thing today. And I believe recent news is a seven-year-old now playing.
That's correct.
Whilst Akarana was once upon a time a club for youngsters, of course we have a number of brilliant young players today, but still all the old-timers still persist. And we like to think that we are able to help Bridge in general in some way. That's one reason why we're still here. The other reason really would be that we're all, let's be honest, we're all addicts.
That is true. So 50 years ago, you played for New Zealand. That's quite remarkable, really. I mean, there'll be some listeners here who will be thinking, I wonder if he used to take a horse and cart to Bridge back in those days.
Did I drive a horse and cart?
Yes.
Obviously, truth will out. That's pretty well where I belong, I would say. I probably still belong there.
You've got an interesting or amusing story to share with our listeners about some of your international travels over the years.
Okay, well, I do remember once it was a significant international championship, and every single table in the open room had basically like a grandstand, a tier of chairs around it for kibitzers. So rising up about four tiers of players around every table. And we had a situation, we were playing against some of our Asian friends, and it was the last match of the day. And in fact, it was half a match. We had half a match that night and the other half was scheduled for the morning. Anyway, our Asian friends bid an insane slam. They needed trumps to behave. They're missing, I believe it was the queen of trumps. But the most significant thing about the hand was they had king, jack, 10x of diamonds in the dummy and a doubleton in hand. I was over the dummy with the ace, queen of diamonds. And if they got the diamonds right, which was impossible, if they found the Queen of Diamonds on side, they would have a pitch and wouldn't have to find another card. So the natural play would be low to the Jack or 10. So it was a seriously bad slam.
Sounds like you're in great shape.
And there'd be no opposition bidding. So they led a small diamond from a hand towards the King Jack 10 small. My partner played small. I had exact count on the hand. They played the 10. And before dummy pulled a card, I put the queen on the table and then the ace immediately following, as to say the hand was over. Anyway, at that point, the dummy actually pulled his hand back from the table and they both went quiet. And then the dummy said, oh, my partner, he didn't call for the 10, he called for top. So it was a bit of a contentious issue. The director was called and at the time they said, oh, well, they couldn't call the chap. They had to go with what the fellow said. Therefore, under the king, I was forced to drop the queen and the ace became a penalty card. So they said that therefore the contract from a King Jack 10X small to the top, which is not really a legal term, I was forced to drop the queen, ace as a penalty card, and of course that meant that they were making the contract. Surprisingly enough, we went to appeal, and there were about four of the kibitzers who gave sworn testimony that the guy called for the 10, and there was no other witnesses, right? No other people were asked to give it an account. Anyway, they said that, you know, that they couldn't call the chap a liar, and so the result stood as the contract making. Anyway, I was completely furious, right? And I learned a valuable lesson that, in fact, from then on, for the rest of my life, basically, I've always waited for the card to be extracted from the dummy before playing my own card. Anyway, the good thing about the story is that was just the halfway point, and overnight, I had to consider, I had to try and work out the laws of the land. Someone had suggested to me that in a game of bridge that was to see murder was basically perceived as a justifiable homicide. I wasn't quite sure of that, but nevertheless, I was furious.
Yeah.
And we had to play the second half of the match the next morning. And here I was basically baying for blood as an old man of 26 or 27 by now. So
you were playing the same
one particular hand. I was the dealer and I opening it favorable. So I opened three clubs and went double on my left and partner passed. And declarer looked at his ace queen 10x of clubs and looked again at the vulnerability and went, okay, three no trumps, he says. Anyway, so I led a small club and partner inserted the seven and declarer won the 10 and singleton had done it. Took a finesse into partner's hand and partner played another club. And he looked at that and thought, oh, okay, I've only preempted on a six-card set. You know, that was pretty cheeky in those days. So he flew with the ace and took another finesse. And sure enough, partner came back another club, meaning I'd obviously preempted three clubs in a five-card suit. So the man pretty well fell off his chair. But in fact, that behavior was absolutely commonplace today. With all the youngsters, you see them all at favorable opening with three clubs and three diamonds on their horrific hand and their five-card suit. And it's very hard to pretty well catch them. So
sometimes
the glory of the story was after an overnight, being down badly overnight, we actually crunched them to zero the next day. So that was a great story at the time, and it stuck with me forever. I mean, I actually remember hands from well before then. That's the way of bridge, isn't it? We remember all sorts of things. And in fact, to be fair, it brings me back to talking about the Akarana Performance Program. And if you look into your own lives, oftentimes we go and play bridge for the day, and we go out for dinner with our chums, and we tell entertaining stories. Now, often those stories are of wonderful things we may have done, perhaps, or horrific things the opponents did against us and the gods were against us. So we often focusing on entertaining stories, the great triumphs and some of the horror losses, but the performance program itself drills down to help accumulate the true factor. And we can see when, in fact, there's just consistent seepage of points going out the back door and so easily forgotten. That's what we're all about, is trying to capture all of that so that one can get a true picture and a fact-driven analysis rather than just good dinner stories. Improve our game rather than just see it as a social exercise. This is truly what it takes to get through this kind of analysis. So that's what we're all about at Akarana. My memories and stories of my history is it's in the distant past. I mean, obviously, I have recent stories as well, but it's of vague interest and it's perhaps their dinner time stories for amusement value. At the end of the day, and not very far away, I'm going to be just dust in the wind. But this program should, in fact, last forever. And as I say, it's a collaboration of many of the people right here in Akarana that have put it together.
So the Akarana Bridge Club hold probably only a couple of tournaments a year, Malcolm, that people could be involved in. You've got something coming up in August, haven't you? An event that people could plan?
Thanks, Gary. We're dedicated to delivering good service. So yes, we only have two tournaments a year. But so what we're doing is actually starting in July, in fact, the last 2 weeks of July, we're going to start a Swiss Pairs event and continue on through all August, which means that it will straddle 6 nights and 2 matches per night, a total of 12 matches. One could play anything from 4 nights to 6 nights to be eligible, and your top 8 match scores will count to the final result. So you could just play only 4 nights, and in fact, all scores would count. Or you could, in fact, play all 6 and drop your 4 worst scores.
What night is this Swiss Pairs event running?
That's going to start on Tuesday, the 21st of July.
So if you plan this, Malcolm, will you receive a report for how you did it each night, or how will that work?
Absolutely. So the whole idea is that we're pushing our program, and that every time you play, your data will continue to be accumulated, which means that, in fact, not only will you get a snapshot of how you've done that night, but you will also see how you've gone through all the time you've stuck with Akarana. So as time goes by, you'll accumulate more and more data, more fact-driven analysis will emerge.
So every time you plan this, the next day perhaps, or the next morning or whatever, you'll get a report emailed to you telling you how you performed and the good things you did and the bad things you did, I guess.
I'd have to say the answer to that, Barry, is no. The answer is no. You will not wait till the next day to get it, because last Friday, that amazing man, Matthew McManus, he had this report out to everybody in everybody's inbox within 10 minutes of the finish of play. Not waiting till the next day, right? So it is that well organized, and that is 100% down to Matthew McManus.
Join us next week with our final segment with Malcolm Mayer. Here we go. We're at the courthouse next.
To know me is to love. I must be a hell of a man. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can.
Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
This is an old chestnut. It always comes up. The novice players can never figure out, how do you decide whether it's going to be a major penalty card or a minor penalty card? And what's the difference anyway? I know we've talked about it before. Can you help us out?
They don't need to decide whether it's a major or a minor penalty card, because it's not their job to decide. If there's any sort of penalty card, they call the director. Rule number one, something is unusual, you call the director. It's a pretty simple rule. It's amazing that some people have trouble understanding that. The sort of most junior players you can think of, they have a friend who's an even more junior player, and they are really happy to tell that other player the rules. People like nothing more than to tell someone who they think is not as good as them exactly what the rules are, instead of calling the director. So they break the rules immediately, because they don't call the director when there is an infraction. So they don't need to decide whether it's a major or a minor penalty card. But when the director arrives there, the director will be deciding based on whether there's some sort of intention when it was put on the table. If you actually put it on the table yourself, then it's a deliberate, like picking it out of your hand, even if you didn't mean to put that one there. If you pick it out of your hand and put it on the table by itself, that is probably a major penalty card. But if it fell out of your hand, or if you picked out 2 cards and the one underneath it was an extra card that was then slightly showing or something, that's a minor penalty card. And there is a big difference between major and minor penalty cards. A major penalty card can, first of all, you have to play it as soon as you can. Only defenders have major penalty cards, or any sort of penalty cards. If your partner's on lead, there could be lead restrictions. Whereas minor penalty cards, if your partner's on lead, they can lead what they like. If you're on lead, you can lead other suits if you want to. The only thing about a minor penalty card is the first time you want to play a small card in that suit, it's got to be that card. As well as the way it came down is the size of the card. A card of 10 or above can never be a minor penalty card. So even if you fumble and the 10 of hearts drops out of hand, that's a major penalty card. But if you fumble and the 9 of hearts drops out of your hand, that's a minor penalty card.
If somebody says something to you, they've been at a table, they're uncomfortable, somebody's sort of gloating or saying, oh, we got 100% on that, or it says you should have made 6 and people not happy about it, how would you handle that?
That depends on exactly how you said it. If someone makes 5 and you look at that little guide card at the end of the hand, how deep finesse can play it, you can be surprised and say, oh, it says here you can make... That's not necessarily gloating and telling someone off for not making six, because you can be surprised about that. There's gloating and gloating, isn't there? There's doing it in a way that's offensive. You could say the same thing, and there's clearly just you're confused about why the guide card says you can make an extra trick. So it's really all in the way it's delivered, or even sometimes in the way the person is taking it. But if they want to complain, then they can call the director and say, look, I'm just a bit uncomfortable about the way that my opponent's telling me that I should have made more tricks. I'll deal with that. I don't get a lot of calls for that. When I'm at the table, I don't see a lot of that, because partly you're not allowed to look at that unless you've got plenty of time. I'm usually there because they're the slowest table in the room and I'm trying to get into the next table. So the last thing I want them to do is to hold up the people behind them by grabbing that sheet out from under the board, having a look to see how many they should have made. I want them at the next table now, because I called the move a couple of minutes ago and I'm there because I'm hurrying on the last table.
Okay.
So I don't actually hear it for that reason, because people aren't having time to have these conversations when I'm there for that reason. So I guess I could be walking past the table and hear it. But no, I can't recall getting a lot of problems like this. If you've had a query about it, it's probably someone who's said, I felt uncomfortable because my opponent did this. Well, if the director wasn't there, then you'll need to call the director to have a chat about how appropriate it is to say things about the way your opponent played. The director at least ask them what was said and go over it. What I wouldn't do is go and have a chat to the director and say by themselves and then say about what you think happened, because you give the director all sorts of problems. First of all, in order to do something about it, you've got to find there's a second side of the story. Whenever someone comes and tells you something by themselves, you can be sure there's another side to that story. It's now a few minutes later, you've got to go and find that other person and you've got to hear their side of the story, and it's different and is really difficult to deal with. So if you have a problem with something, be polite when you call the director, but call the director at the time. Hopefully people's recollections will be the same and you can deal with it.
That's a novel idea, Mariana. Be polite when you call the director.
See, I can give you two examples. Well, one is, Sheriff! And the other is, oh, I'm feeling a bit uncomfortable. I'm just going to call the director and see how this sort of situation should be dealt with. Director.
Yeah.
There's two ways of doing it. You can be aggressive when you call the director, and you can call the director politely. Both things are possible.
Awesome.
Thank you, Patrick.
Good luck to the youth team that are winging their way to Hefei in China, and we'll see you at the tables.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international, nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.